Welcome into the program. Follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss along with Matt Eubanks filling in for Paulie this week. Live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino is your spot. The Bear, Chris Felica, will join us to talk some college football in about 5 minutes. I want to continue. We did this, Matt, at the end of last hour. Let's pick it up here at the beginning of this hour. This tweet from Chris Mortensen on the asking price, the Texans now for Deshaun Watson. A combination of 5 high draft picks and starting caliber players per 2 league executives is what the Texans would want in return for Watson. Now, right. Of course, all of his legal issues would come along with this. The fact that he's been injured in the past obviously comes along with this as well with the ACLs. But on the flip side, if the Broncos would acquire him, those high draft picks, like let's say they give up 2 first-round picks, 2 second-round picks, whatever it might be, those first-round picks are going to be where? In the mid to high 20s? Because he goes there, this team's going to be a Super Bowl contender, certainly an AFC West and the conference contender as well, winning 10, 11, 12, 13 games?
Well, you have to give it. The Broncos would have to, let's say the Broncos give it up, or the Eagles, or what. Deshaun Watson's going to play maybe half this season. If I said the over-under in number of games Deshaun Watson plays in 2021 is 7.5, you playing that over or under?
I would lean over, but that's probably the right number.
I think he's going to be eligible to play about half the half.
Makes sense to me, yeah.
We'll see. That's just guesswork. So the Broncos, if they had Watson for half the season, who knows? What their first-round draft pick next year might be number 17, right? So obviously, somewhere in that range, 15 to 20, who knows? I think there's got to be, if you're trying to find a way to make this deal, there's got to be a way you can massage it to make it work.
Right. Well done.
Okay.
Well done.
I wouldn't give up more than 2 first-round picks.
So you do 2 first-round picks and then like a player or 2 as well?
I'd give up 2 first-round picks, maybe a second-round pick, a third-rounder, and then a player, something like that.
Okay.
That's where you would start. I can't give up 3 first-rounders.
Not
the Clippers.
No, 3 is too many. 2,
or the Los Angeles Rams or whatever. You can't give away all your first-round draft picks.
Yep. You know, because people, for many, many years, you know, teams and, you know, media, whatever, they would say that, you know, first-round picks are so valuable, and they are, but the problem is it's still like a coin toss in the first round. A lot of times it's actually less than 50-50 that a player is going to actually come out and develop into a good player, a solid starter, a Pro Bowl player, or a guy like Watson. Like, for somebody to develop into Watson that you're going to get in this draft, or who you would, you know, acquire from the draft picks, probably is not going to happen.
No.
And you're probably going to hit it with like 1 or 2 guys, and the other 2 or 3 that you're going to get in the draft won't make it in the NFL.
All you have to do is look at the quarterbacks drafted in the top 10 a few years ago. 3 of them were bust.
Yeah.
You know, have been bust. So it's even when you draft a quarterback in the top 10, you're still kind of flipping a coin sometimes.
We will talk college football with the Bear, Chris Felica, from College Game Day coming up next. Maybe some win totals with him. And maybe some time as well. Who does he like to win gold, men's golf, with no Rahm and DeChambeau? The Bears coming up next.
This is Brent Musburger, and here is your VSiN Action Update. Now, here are the latest lines from my guys in the desert.
The NFL preseason slate starts on Thursday, August 5th. Steelers and Cowboys in the Hall of Fame game. Pittsburgh favored by a point with an over-under of 34. Some NFL prop bets. The first coach to be fired, Vic Fangio at plus 500. Mike McCarthy at plus 600. Cliff Kingsbury and Matt Nagy at both at plus 750. The favorite to win coach of the year, Brian Flores, plus 700. Ron Rivera at plus 750. Arthur Smith, new head coach of the Falcons, plus 900. Brandon Staley at plus 1,400. As far as Super Bowl favorites, Kansas City plus 500, Tampa Bay plus 600 to repeat, the Buffalo Bills at plus 1,200. Football season is almost here, and our experts profile every college and pro team with advanced stats, power ratings, and best bets for win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Each guide only $20 and is free with your subscription to VSiN. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. I'm Tony Desiri with your Action Update.
Get the latest VSiN odds at VSIN.com. And remember, cashing tickets is what it's all about.
Oh. It's time to follow the money with your hosts, Mitch Moss and Polly Howard.
It's good to have you on board. The VSiN football betting guides are coming soon, and there is no better way to prepare for the college and pro seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Each guide is only $20, and discounts are available when you buy both. Now is the time to reserve your copy or sign up for VSiN All Access and get everything we offer for the entire football season. Sign up now at vsin.com/subscribe. The Bear, Chris Felica, joins the program now, kind enough to take some time to join us here on a Monday morning and talk some college football from, of course, ESPN College Game Day. Chris, good to talk to you, my friend. How are you today?
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, great being on with you guys, chatting with you. We're doing good. Last day in the country for a couple weeks. Headed on a well-needed vacation after the show.
Taking off tomorrow for Italy, is that right?
Today.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Yeah, doing the trip we were going to do last May and June before everything went crazy on us all in the world. So, doing a make good now before the college football season. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, awesome. Matt, you ever been to Europe?
I have not. And I really don't want to go right now, considering all the stuff that's going on. I wish you safe travels, Chris, and hopefully not too many delays or canceled flights along your way to Italy. I did have one question for you before we jump in here. Do you remember the TV show That's Incredible?
I do. Okay. I do, and I can remember the big capital letter font. Oh yeah, absolutely, it's fantastic tonight.
I love that show as a kid, Mitch. You don't remember?
Recall that. Okay. We're learning that. So was Fran Tarkenton the host? Is that accurate?
I don't remember if he was the host or a co-host or what, but I do remember him as being a part of that. Oh yeah, that was like vintage, like late. I mean, I remember it in the late 70s, early 80s.
Okay, so. So, Barry, as we get ready for the college football season, like, how caught up are you on it? I'm sure you're going to be taking, magazines. You've downloaded probably a bunch of stuff to listen to, whatever it is. Studying might take place on your flight over to Italy, but where are you at right now with college football?
I'm in an okay spot. Okay. I'm usually a little more dialed in than I am right now, but just with some of the golf and the Olympic stuff, I'm not 100% totally locked with it, but I'm in a really good spot. Now I'm more like kind of just fine-tuning and trying to come up with my own little notes and nuggets and stuff to add to whatever I've read so far.
At this point, the best bet that you've made so far, in your opinion, the best number that you've gotten would be what?
I think Indiana under 8 is probably the best number that I got. It's come down to 7.5 in a lot of places. And look, one of the things that I've gone into the season, and I think it's probably wise for a lot of people to do, is just kind of look at just to figure out what last year was. Was last year an anomaly totally, or was it real? Like, and I think if you look at Indiana, you just have to take the season into account. Like, they were considered the second best team in the Big Ten, and that they had a magical year. But I think that a lot of it was circumstance. The Penn State game, I don't know what the replay official was doing. It should not have been a touchdown. Mm-hmm. That should have been a loss.
Yep.
You beat Maryland, who wasn't very good at the time. You beat Michigan State, who was terrible. You beat Michigan, who was as bad as it was going to be. You beat Rutgers, who at that point in the year was kind of trending down. And Wisconsin was playing out the string. Ian Womack is gone on defense. Jamar Johnson is gone. A lot of their metrics were kind of unsustainable things in terms of like red zone defense and leading the nation in like red zone turnover touchdown percentage there and best turnover percentage on defense in the Big Ten. I mean, you don't start off with an easy game at Kinnick at all. You're not going to beat Ohio State. Like, I don't know. I don't think this team goes 9-3. I'm happy to take the 8 and push it on 8-4, but I think 7-5 is probably a luckless match. Look, you take last year out of the equation, 8-4 is a great year for Indiana. And that's kind of, I think, what their ceiling is. Mm-hmm. So, if they go 9-3 and beat me, congratulations.
Yeah, I like that bet a lot, too, because, like you said, Indiana's got to go 9-3 to beat you. And the Hoosiers play at Iowa, just for starters, at Iowa, at Penn State, and play Ohio State as well. So it's going to be a tough road to get to 9-3 for Indiana. A lot of times, those teams that let's say, overachieve 1 year, tend to bounce the next. I could see that happening with Indiana. What about Iowa State, which is kind of a team like that? Last year, Brent Musburger was on last week, and he was touting the Cyclones. I know you've been on Iowa State quite a bit in the past. Do you like the Cyclones that much this year or no?
I'm a little concerned, only because, I mean, everybody's kind of a year late on this team. And they had everybody back, which is great. But you're a team now that has not dealt with any pressure or expectations forever.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't Matt Campbell has not beaten Iowa. They've come close a couple of times. You get Oklahoma on the road, and they beat Oklahoma on the road and played well there. You know, the one thing I do like about this is it seems like Matt Campbell as a coach is able to get messages across to his team and get them to kind of block out a lot of the noise and get them to play team football. But 9.5 is a tough number because if they lose to Iowa right out of the gate, then I think you have to look at how do they bounce back from that. They bounced back from an early loss last year against Louisiana to come back and come within a couple of yards of winning the Big 12. 9.5 for me is a tough number. It's a stay away for me. But if you're looking to maybe play them to win the Big 12, maybe that's what you do because, again, you just have to finish second in the Big 12 and maybe in a second shot against Oklahoma on a neutral field, they would potentially fare better if they do lose in Norman during regular season.
Can I ask both of you guys what you just said about Iowa State? Something that Paul Stone always discusses, and I think, you know, I've heard some bettors say it's not really a thing. I think it is. Paul Stone absolutely thinks it is. You guys just brought it up. Like, that does exist, right, where a team and a head coach, they are much better as, like, the dog.
Oh,
and
no doubt.
And as Paul says, he calls him the hunter. But once they become mm-hmm. the hunted, that when you got a bullseye on your back, that changes a lot, does it not?
Oh, I think it changes everything. It changes the way I handicap teams. I know that. I think it – Chris, I'll let you go ahead and expand on that. But, yeah, when a team's always been in the dog role and suddenly flips to the favorite role, that's when that team becomes a bet against for me.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Tom Herman at Texas and Houston, in his coaching year, he was a prime example mm-hmm. of a team that was much better than Mark D'Antonio at Michigan State, when they were kind of building their program up, but when they were not expected to beat Ohio State, not expected to beat Michigan, that they were much better in that role than when they finally got to the top, and then that's when they created their decline down. So I totally agree with what Paul and you guys are onto there.
All right, what do you make of the chaos in college football now? Texas, Oklahoma, trying to go to the SEC. There's a lot to talk about here, but let's try to capsulize it in 2 or 3 minutes. Where do you think this whole thing is headed?
Doesn't it appear that it's so far down the road already that there's no turning back?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it appears to me. But at the same time, without Oklahoma and Texas, the Big 12 is done. So it's not like the Big 12 is going to say, oh, no, we don't want you back. They're going to do everything they can to try and hold on to them. I am not a fan of these, like, 16-team mega conferences. I don't like what I potentially think the sport will become. And Oklahoma has obviously been one of the best teams in the country the last few years. But that Texas brand, I mean, Texas has not been a factor nationally on the field for 12 years now. So but that's what I'm struggling with. And at the same time, like what becomes of everything else? Like it's not going to stop there. Someone, whether it's Big Ten or the Pac-12, will pluck Kansas just because of Kansas basketball. It's like the biggest chip left, if indeed Oklahoma and Texas leave. So Kansas will have to go somewhere, and then in order to create another 16-team league, someone else will have to tag along with Kansas to whatever conference that Kansas basketball is attracted to. And after that, but I get a feeling you're going to see teams like potentially like will the Big Ten want Iowa State? Will Iowa want them in the conference? Like that's the second best pro football program in the Big 12 right now. But are they going to be without a home? A team like Kansas State or a team like Texas Tech? Like I think those teams is going to be very interested to see what potentially happens with them. I hope that somehow something get worked out and they can kind of make their financial obligations a reality for what's needed for them to stay, because that conference without them is done, and I think you're going to have a power four, and then every it's going to kind of be last man standing for themselves.
Yeah, I hate this. I hate the fact that Texas and Oklahoma are trying to go to the SEC. This is going to really change a lot of things in college football. I think it's unnecessary. What are the benefits, really, for Texas and Oklahoma by going to the SEC? Are the benefits that great, Chris?
I think it's got to be money, right?
Well, yeah, certainly. A little bit.
But honestly, like, I'm trying to put a positive spin on it myself. Like, what good could come of this? Like, mm-hmm. Do we get a 10-game SEC schedule? If it's 16 teams, like, do we get that? Like, I think the long play here is that these teams maybe potentially think being in the SEC makes them maybe more attractive to an expanded playoff. But I don't know. I kind of think, like, the expanded playoff is kind of the thing that a lot of these teams are looking at. Like, do you think that your program is going to be more valuable to recruit better than what they currently are? Like, Texas already is, like, the most endowed school in the country, I believe. So, like how much do you really need?
Right.
But, like, from a competition standpoint, it's much, much more difficult than having to deal with some of those teams in that league. And again, publicly, the SEC is going to make that vote, whatever it is, if it does get approved, 14-1, whatever, 13-1 or 14-0. But if you're a team at the bottom or in the middle, like Kentucky or Vanderbilt or Mississippi schools, like, all that's going to do is knock your programs down even more and give you less of a chance of having a successful season. So I don't know why some of the middling and bottom schools in this league would want it.
Yeah, I think greed's going to be the downfall of some of these teams, and it's going to hurt college football. One more question on this topic. So what would happen to the Pac-12? Does the Pac-12 try to go get, BYU, Boise State? Who does the Big Ten go after? What does Notre Dame do? Have you thought about those things, what might happen?
Well, that's the thing. I think a lot of the Pac-12 and the Big Ten have these like AAU academic guidelines, and so I'm curious to see what ultimately will come out. But, like, this adding so many of these conferences do this with, like, television markets in mind, and, like, how much can this school provide revenue for us? Like, is BYU going to add a whole lot to the Pac-12, being that they already have Utah from that Salt Lake market? Like, I don't know. I mean, right. maybe it will. Will Boise State do the same? I mean, like, on the field, we certainly know that they can play with them, but is that something that the Pac-12 is going to want? So, yeah, Notre Dame, I think, is still going to stay put, and there have been some pretty good stories written on that, why they will.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think Kansas would be the first to follow. We'll see who tags along with that. But it's amazing to think that, I mean, because Kansas, other than basketball, brings absolutely nothing. Like, it's interesting, the people out there getting into conversations about, like, oh, Kansas is much better than Oregon in terms of, but you have to take the entire athletic department into a whole. Like, Oregon in the Pac-12, all these conferences, all these schools in the Pac-12, like, the Olympic sports are so strong. So, like I think that comes into play as well in the Pac-12.
All right, a couple of minutes left here, Bear. Who wins gold in men's golf at the Olympics?
Well, it's interesting. It certainly seems like it's very wide open right now. I think Hanamaru Kawa is now the favorite, being that Rahm and Bryson are after. He obviously has a great shot. I wouldn't play Matsuyama just because I think there's so much pressure on him there. I would maybe take a look at someone like Cam Smith or Sung Jae Im. In that second tier of golfer, obviously Xander Schauffele is someone who's played well as well. So if you can give me like five plays and guarantee myself making some money out of this, I play Morikawa, I play Schauffele, I play Cam Smith, I play Sung Jae Im, and maybe take a shot with someone like Corey Connors. But like Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, I wouldn't be too interested in. Mm-hmm. And playing those guys. Corey Connors is an interesting guy. He's kind of just like in no man's land of the odds. And again, not getting bet at all, but he played great at the Open Championship. I didn't think he was going to play well there at all. And I actually got him around 40-1 or so to win the gold. So I think that's a pretty good bet. And then with the South Koreans, like, if they medal, isn't there some military exemption? So you would think, like, for Sung Jae Im, someone like that, there would be a pretty good motivation there to play well. Especially in that region, not in its own country, but just across the sea there.
Yeah, I was talking with Doug Kazarian about that here in the circuit book actually Saturday night, because I said Sungjae Im, Siwoo Kim, those are guys I was looking at about 35 or 50 to 1, and they can avoid a 2-year military commitment if they medal. And Doug said he thinks that's more pressure on the players. He thinks that's going to be a negative, where some people look at it as motivation.
Yeah, it certainly could go the other way, knowing that the reward of playing well. Doug does have a point there. But I think if that number, with the field being a little bit more open than it was, I think I'd be willing to take a chance there.
All right. I was going to say, we have to wrap it up. Have you been betting the Olympics much?
Yeah. No, I think some of the swimming events have been really good. And when the USA to win the gold in basketball kind of bottomed out and hit the bottom, I bought, and we'll see what happens with that now. I looked too good after that first game, but from where the number was and where it went to, I figured we'll take a chance.
Hey, Bear, great talking to you. Have a great trip over to Italy, and I'm sure the Bear and the Stanford Sea podcast is returning sometime soon after you get back.
Yes. Exactly. The week after we get back, we'll have a couple things in store for sure.
Very cool. Great conversation today, Chris.
Appreciate it.
Yep, there you go. Chris Felica, Game Day, ESPN as well. Up next, hey, we're going to expand on what we're hearing the Texans want for Deshaun Watson, but we've got a great tweet to put in perspective. Why would you not want to make this deal? We'll tell you about that coming up next.
All right, First Bet has a special offer for new customers. Get an instant $10 free upon sign up and then earn $10 for every $1,000 wagered up to $1,000. Visit vsin.com/horses for details. When you go to vsin.com/horses, you also find a new feature. Daily Saratoga picks from veteran handicapper Ed Seahorn. This is a great time of year for horse players with Del Mar and Saratoga running at the same time. Use the bonus code VEGAS1000. It's vsin.com/horses, promo code VEGAS1000.
Matt, a little bit more here on the Texans this morning, opening up trade talks, or at least they're willing to listen, as Tom Pelissero now points out, NFL Network, that they've been willing for quite some time. Multiple sources are telling him and Ian Rappaport that the price is high, and it would likely take at least 3 first-round picks.
Wait a minute,
and
at least?
More.
Did you say at least?
Yep.
So it could take 4 first-round picks?
Judging by his wording, sure.
No, I think that's probably... It could take as many as 3 first-round picks.
Yeah, here's what
not
I would
at
say.
At least. No, nobody's given up 4 first-round picks for Deshaun Watson.
And I don't know if any team would give up 3 first-round picks.
The Rams would. Before they traded for Stafford, they would have, but they had no first-round picks to trade anymore.
Right, yeah, exactly right. The 2031, 2032, and the 2047 first-round pick can be yours. So you and I were talking about this during the break. I'm for, 2 first-round picks and more for Deshaun Watson. But at some point, the Texans need to read the room on this. A, guy has massive legal issues, right? Okay. B, he doesn't want to be there. And C, you cannot overlook the fact that he does have an injury history.
No kidding.
So if you're going to get greedy now all of a sudden, that's probably not going to happen.
Kind of like when you're courting a girlfriend, or considering whether or not to ask this girl out, and you look at the situation. Yeah, she's hot, but she's got baggage. Got a bad attitude, and she's got health issues.
Yes. Right.
So you got to consider everything.
Yes. Exactly right. Well put. And so if they're going to want 3, that's going to turn off a lot of teams. But I will say this. If it's not 3, and if they would do what Mortensen was reporting an hour ago, which was going to be, a combination of 5 picks and maybe a proven player, whatever that entire list might look like, this is a good tweet from at ML Dogs. If Jamal Adams is worth 2 firsts and other picks. Isn't Watson worth a lot more? I'm looking at the exact trade right now.
Well, I thought they gave up too much for Adams.
The Seahawks did.
Yeah.
The Seahawks were, I mean, we're talking about, I'm looking, they gave up.
Rams gave up too much for Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, they did.
Seahawks gave up too much for Jamal Adams. So, yeah, those teams overpaid.
It was a first, two first and a third at least for him. That's what you're calling overpaying, but right, if you're going to give up that much for Jamal Adams, teams should be willing to give up two.
Mitch, if you give up that much for a player, that's got to be the one player who puts you over the top to get to a Super Bowl. Jamal Adams, I really like him a lot as
so
a defensive player. He's all over the field. But he's not that one player who puts the Seahawks over the top.
No, and a quarterback the caliber of Deshaun Watson absolutely can do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Captain Obvious checking in here. But, I mean, for the Broncos, I know a lot of the talk is about the Broncos here. Just because, and boy, you know, I actually think that right now the Broncos are being overhyped without Watson.
Yeah.
People love the defense. There's a lot to like. Fangio's still the head coach. I don't like the quarterback situation. But if they would get Watson, I would change my tune on that.
Mm-hmm.
Big time. I mean, again, I think that they're what, if you put the Chiefs win total at, let's say, 12 and a half, whatever it is, and then the Broncos win total would have to be probably 11 and a half with Deshaun Watson.
Well,
on a 17-game season?
If he plays 17 games.
Yeah, correct, yes.
You have to keep all that in perspective because with Deshaun Watson, he could be suspended for half the year. So you have to, let's look at 2022.
That's what, would the what Bron- you need to do.
Yeah, the Broncos win total might be 10.5 with Watson next year, 10.5 or 11. I also think that Vic Fangio is always going to have a hard time winning 11 games because he can't manage games properly. He mismanages the end of games, and we've seen it with the Broncos, even with the previous coach, where the coach could cost them two or three wins just by screwing up.
Correct.
Game management issues.
Yep.
So I still think the Broncos, even if you make a deal for Watson, you still are going to have. I love Vic Fangio as a defensive coordinator.
Right.
But if you're going to take the next step, the Broncos have to change head coaches.
The guy would like Watson a lot, obviously, on the Broncos. But the thing is, he just played. He had an incredible season last year.
Mm-hmm.
They won four games, right? The Texans are a bad football team. If he would go to the Eagles, that's still a bad football team. So what are they going to do? Are they even going? Would they win the NFC East? You know, automatically? I'm not sure it's that easy by going to the Eagles.
Nah, it's not going to be that easy.
Guys, follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Email is always open. It's ftm@vsin.com. We'll get to what we are betting in pocket plays coming up next.
The guy has an algorithm to determine the winner of any given college basketball game.
Someone gives you 10,000 to 1 on anything. You take it. Take it. Take it.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I'll give you 3-1 odds.
Nope.
5-1.
Nope.
10-1.
You're up.
Here. All right, time to fire. Here we go with in-pocket plays. I had a loser on Friday with Garrett Cole. He was in good form into that game against the Red Sox, but he had a rough sixth inning, and he lost that day against Boston. I'm on two games today, Matt, in the Olympics. Women's basketball. I like Belgium +8 against Australia. They are without, the Aussies are without their best player, Liz Cambage. I've actually been to one of the Aces games here in town to watch. It was a good environment over at Mandalay Bay. Mm-hmm. WNBA. She was playing in that game. I'll give you some of the numbers that they're missing with her. She averaged 23.8 points per game, 10.5 rebounds per game at the 2018 FIBA World Cup. Second place finish that year. That was per game. After that, 22-20 in like the qualifying stuff, she was fantastic. The qualifier was 26.3 points per game, 11 rebounds, and 2.3 blocks. Meanwhile, Belgium in 2018 and recently they've been playing pretty good as a team, actually quite well as a team, catching 8 points. Certainly this number has been adjusted with no Liz in the lineup, but I'll take the 8 plus Belgium. That's at, I believe, 1:20 a.m. Pacific tonight is when the game tips off.
Before the Tuesday show.
Yes, before Tuesday show. I wanted to sneak it in there tonight. Or
right.
Today, I should say.
You're playing Belgium +8.
+8, yes. Women's Olympics and in Major League Baseball today.
By the way, Liz from the Las Vegas Aces, she's a big-time player, man. She really is.
She is awesome. And obviously means a lot to that team and to that country and their chances for winning. In baseball, Mike Palm tipped me off to this. with Wade Miley. Again, he refreshed my memory last week when he was in studio. He told me this like a while back. He said, keep an eye on this guy. Well, his numbers, remember he had that no-hitter? Then he got rocked in his next start. Well, since the start after that, it goes back to, I think, May 19th. 10 starts, met a 2.11 ERA. The FIP is 3.19, so about a run higher. But a lot of his numbers are really, really good. I know Hendricks has had a solid year for the Cubs, but I'll take the plus 115 today with Wade Miley and the Reds.
Okay. Yeah, Kyle Hendricks had a real hot stretch for the Cubs.
Yep.
By the way, we were talking about trade deadline deals and things that make sense. The Dodgers absolutely have to go after Craig Kimbrell and the Cubs.
No doubt.
I think the Mets have to make a play for Chris Bryant. How about the Red Sox making a play for Anthony Rizzo?
Interesting. That's more popular lineup.
And just think about it. The Cubs are going to tear this whole thing down, aren't they?
Well, the talk was it was going to be Baez and Rizzo that they were going to keep, but who knows if somebody offers you enough in return. I think maybe anybody could be on the block. And I don't understand why that player is Chris Bryant, but...
I don't either.
Yeah.
Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But Jed Hoyer is going to make some deals. The Cubs are going to be the team to watch here at the trade deadline. All right, let's go to In Pocket. I came up short with Louis Oosthuizen in the win, the 3M Open at TPC Twin Cities, 15-1. Louis is one of those guys, rarely the bride, almost too often the bridesmaid.
Way too often.
Man, he still has not won on U.S. soil.
He's never won a tournament over here?
Nah.
Wow.
Thought he had a pretty good shot yesterday. Okay, let's go with these two. Chris Felica talked about this. You and I talked about this. Let's go ahead and jump on the buy low spot with USA Basketball to win the gold medal right now. Minus 200. I think there's going to be a lot of overreactions to what happened at the end of the game against France. This is the cheapest price we've seen on USA Basketball since when?
I'm going to say...
Dream Team?
The prices in 2004... What were they? Because in 2004, they were getting blown out. I think Puerto Rico beat them by 19.
Yeah.
You know, I'll go back and get that. I want the 2004 scores.
Yeah, the U.S.'s 25-game winning streak was just stopped, and the last loss was in 2004 to Argentina.
Yep.
I still think this team has enough talent. Popovich is going to figure it out. I wasn't going to lay minus 500 or even minus 350 with the U.S., but now that it's down to minus 200, let's roll the dice here on a what I think is the rock bottom price on the USA Basketball to win gold.
I agree with that, yeah, on the number. You want the scores from that year?
Yes.
In 2004? They lost their first game in group play to Puerto Rico, 92-73.
I forgot that game was a blowout.
Destroyed in the
game. How did you get blown out by Puerto Rico?
Great question. Matt, they beat Greece by 6. They beat Australia by 10. They then lost to Lithuania 94-90, came back, destroyed Angola 89-53, survived Spain 102-94, then lost in the semis to Argentina 89-81, and came back and then beat Lithuania 104-96 to claim bronze that year. But a 19-point loss to Puerto Rico in group play? Oh, my God.
I forgot all about that game. What the hell happened there?
That's a great question.
All right, I've been working on the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, which is going to be out later this week. We're very close to finishing this thing up. And Pac-12 is one of the conferences I worked on. And I got to give a nod to Stanford Steve of ESPN for this, because he was the first one to tell me that he really liked Utah a lot. And after I get done with my research on Pac-12, I said, I like Utah a lot, too. Best offensive and defensive lines in the Pac-12. A depth chart littered with veteran players, studs on the offensive defense line, and that's where it starts. You also have a quarterback in Charlie Brewer, who's a grad transfer from Baylor, who can take the offense to the next level, and Kyle Whittingham, for my money, definitely the best coach in the Pac-12. This price was around 12-1 or 14-1 at some books. You can still find at William Hill in Nevada, Utah to win the Pac-12 at 10-1. That price is down to 6-1 at most places, so jump on it now. I think the schedule also works in Utah's favor. Game at USC, but home games against Arizona State, UCLA and one other advantageous home game. Anyway, the schedule breaks the Utes way.
They get Oregon at home.
Oregon, that's the other one. Thanks. Mm-hmm. 10-1 to win the Pac-12. I think a really good bet on Utah. Right now, about the fifth team at a lot of places, the fifth team on the futures board, and my number one rated team in the Pac-12.
Wow. Okay, they play at BYU right away this year.
Yeah, BYU's got to find a new quarterback.
Yes, they do.
It's time to put on your lucky pair of Crocs and channel your inner fortune teller, because your prediction just might make you $10,000 richer. The Crocs Hoop Draft Prediction Challenge is coming, and dare we say, free to play on DraftKings.com. The odds are in your favor. 10 G's could be yours. Again, the Crocs Hoops Draft Prediction Challenge. Let's say that 10 times real fast. Learn more at DraftKings.com/Crocs, and we will break down the NBA draft further on the VSiN shows this week. The draft is what night?
What is it, 28th, I think? Wednesday? I got to double check. I got to double check that. We'll discuss Olympic betting with Wes Reynolds coming up next. Water polo, swimming, canoe slalom goes today, beach volleyball,
golf.
Men's golf as well. That's coming up here on VSiN. If you're looking for a hot tip to bet on, BetRivers Sportsbook has you covered every day. Go to the BetRivers app or BetRivers.com and find the game you want to bet on. Tap tips and you'll get instant research for the upcoming matchup. Try it out for baseball, soccer, tennis, and a variety of other sports. And to make your experience even more rewarding, BetRivers offers a live most streams of major sports, instant payouts, and only one-time playthrough. BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. The offer is valid in Colorado, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Virginia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Available at PlaySugarHouse.com, New Jersey as well. And you must be 21. Wes Reynolds joins the program now. Dynamite golf handicapper, Olympic handicapper as well, and a host here on VSiN. Wes, good morning. How are you today, pal?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing well. Let me ask you this. Did you plan on being on Rahm or DeChambeau before they had to pull out because of COVID?
I did not, because, look, this is only a 60-player field, so you can't really go too deep, like, in a normal futures market. If you're doing, like, an outright market where you can play anywhere from, like, 6, 7, 8 guys when you usually have 150, 160 players in the field. So you only have 60 here this week. I did not necessarily plan on being on those guys, and I don't really necessarily plan on being on a lot of the real super short prices anyway, because we only have one Olympic sample size in terms of one golf event, and that was in Rio back in 2016. Now, that was a weaker field, keep in mind, because a lot of guys weren't going to Rio because they had their own health concerns at that time. So a lot of guys weren't going. So you actually have a much stronger field, because I believe last time in Rio, two of the three shorter prices were basically 1-2. Henrik Stenson was the favorite in the event in 2016. He got the silver. Justin Rose was like the third voice price down the board, and he was 11-1. So, you know, shorter prices did better last time because you had a weaker field, but you have a much stronger field at least this time around.
Yeah, Justin Rose was a winner at the men's golf in Rio. This time, Wes, by the way, Wes Reynolds and I are going to be on Long Shots, and that's going to be on VSiN Tuesday night. We're going to tape that tomorrow morning. Brady Cannon on vacation, so we'll talk in depth about the Olympics and everything left on the golf calendar. I was not going to look at DeChambeau. I was not going to look at Rahm. I'm definitely going to look at longer shots here. Wes, give us a couple players that you're thinking about playing here, maybe in the 20-50-1 range. I'm sure you got a couple guys on your radar.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt, because when you look at this course, and I was just kind of getting a breakdown of the course this morning, there's a lot of thick rough on this course, so you really don't want to be wayward off the tee here. So, you know, this is not a course that really features on the Asian Tour, the Japanese Tour. I think last major event there was like 2010. So, you know, you got to keep it in the fairway. So it's kind of the usual stats that you're looking at from week to week. You're going to be looking at strokes gained approach. You're going to be looking at strokes gained off the tee. So it's really kind of the normal stuff from a stats standpoint that you're at least looking at. So a little bit down the board, a guy that's kind of in the high teens or around 20-1 would be Paul Casey, who has been pretty consistent this year, does have a win over in Dubai earlier in the season on the Euro Tour. But this is a guy top five in terms of ball striking, tee to green, and he's done pretty much everything in his career except win some like really big event. He's not yet won a major. Obviously, I think they would treat a gold medal as kind of that career milestone accomplishment. So a guy like Paul Casey, Thomas Peters from Belgium, who's going to be around 60-1, pretty much on market average, one of the top 10 on the European Tour in terms of tee to green. So I would be looking at him, maybe showing a little bit of interest in Joaquin Niemann too, who I know you and I, Matt, have bet a few times during this year and really hasn't found that form he found in Hawaii, where he had back-to-back runners up to start the year. But guy that stands out, I think, pretty much stat-wise, off the tee, strokes gained, ball striking, you know, kind of looking for that big event, still a very young player. So some guys are going to be, I like to think everybody's going to be motivated, because you wouldn't go, you know, with all the COVID restrictions, especially over in Japan, if you weren't ready to play. Right. But some guys, you're going to have some variance in terms of the motivation between some of these players.
Had to bring up Joaquin Niemann, didn't you? Finished second with him three times this year, twice in a playoff.
Well, what do you need to twist your arm to bet him?
I didn't bring up Patrick Reed, though.
That's right.
By the way, Patrick Reed was Indy Jeff's number one rated golfer and his model over the weekend. How did Fat Pat do? Did he win the tournament?
He did not
win the tournament. No, he did not. Okay.
No. Are you going to be? Do you plan on betting on Niemann in this golf tournament or no?
I'm thinking about it.
Okay. All right. You probably will.
I don't want... You hate it to be the week that guy wins and you don't bet him when you bet him all season, right? And then he finally breaks through and wins a tournament. And you say, "Well, I didn't bet him this week." You feel like an idiot.
I'm seeing, by the way, guys, I'm seeing Niemann down to 18-1 right now.
That's
stay away.
That's not a very. At one point, he was around 30. I think 38-1, 35-1, 38-1. So I don't know.
Wes, what would you want to bet him at this point?
Yeah, I would need like mid-20s on Niemann if I was going to get involved here. We've already seen a little bit of drift. I did play one player, and this was a few weeks ago. It's a much lower number now, but I did play Sungjae at 40-1 just because I knew that was going to drop, because, of course, we now know what's happening in South Korea, where Sungjae Im and Siwoo Kim are the representatives in this field. If you win any Olympic medal, gold, silver, or bronze, that's going to exempt those two guys from the two-year military service obligation. And if you remember a player by the name of Sangmoon Bae, who won a couple times on the PGA Tour, then he went and did that military obligation, and he's never been the same as a golfer since. And you have two talented guys that have won on tour like Im and Siwoo Kim.
Mm-hmm.
But you do a two-year obligation, that's going to change your golfing career of what is a really promising career for both of these guys. So I understand why those guys are going to get bet. I know there's pressure there on those two guys, but there's pressure every week, especially like when you're playing in your own country. We see that a lot on the European Tour. Like if you're playing the Nordea Masters in Sweden and you're a Swede, there's always a big amount of pressure on you to win in your homeland. So, you know, I don't worry necessarily too much about the pressure, but I basically just took Sungjae just to take a number.
Sungjae Im 33-1 here at the Circa. Looks like Niemann is still 32-1.
Is he here?
And Siwoo Kim 55-1. So some pretty good numbers on those players here at Circa Sports. Might have to hit those before I head home here. Wes, I don't think anybody tweets about the Olympics more than you do. I noticed when the Olympics started, you were tweeting nonstop about everything. You even tweeted last night about the Taekwondo stream setting up ceremonies between finals. The in-house arena music playing as Cheryl Lynn, Got to Be Real, Into Earth, Wind, and Fire, Let's Groove. Never knew American funk like and disco was so big in Japan. Yeah,
they like the disco over there, apparently. I just happened to notice it because I was like, okay, what's going on right now? Because all the events are, of course, ending. Because Tokyo, by the way, where we are on the West Coast, is 16 hours ahead of us, 13 hours ahead if you're on the East Coast. So you get all these random events, so it's been nice to have the swimming, at least in prime time live, because next week when we get to the track and field, we're not going to get that. It's like you're going to have the 100-meter dash basically be run right during this show on Follow the Money. So it's like, how do you treat that for the audience? It's like, do you report on it? Because, look, it's happening in sports right now, and there's betting ramifications. So it's like, do you report on it now, or do you wait, or do you do the spoiler alert because people are going to want to watch in prime time? Well, it's like, well, then it's like half a day old when this has already happened. That's what we were noticing with USA France yesterday. It wasn't on anywhere like on the major live networks. You had to get it on the Peacock or one of the streams because NBC, in their infinite wisdom, did not show it on Sunday morning live.
Yeah. By the way, Mitch, while you were on vacation, I tried to tell JVT about one of the great international players of all time, Oscar Schmidt. And John had no clue who the guy was. Of course, John wasn't born when Oscar Schmidt was a shooting star. Wes tweeted about this last night when Luka Doncic scored 48.
Uh-huh.
Oscar Schmidt's record, the Olympics record, 55 points for Spain in September 1988. You know who Oscar Schmidt is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I can. Yeah. I mean, I was young, but I remember the name for sure. And 55?
Olympics record, 55 points.
By the way, Wes, we only have a couple minutes here, but which sports generally do you find the biggest edge in when it comes to the Olympics? Because there are so many that we only get like every 4 years, you know, that we can fire on.
Yeah, when I'm looking at this, Mitch, because a lot of the team events, you just got to bet game by game because there's pool play, and then they advance in the tournament play.
Yep.
So really the only things I've been betting the normal stuff like basketball. I've been doing a little bit of swimming. But, you know, I feel for some of the books in the regards of you want to offer a lot of this stuff, and I commend those that are offering a multitude of sports. But it's like you don't have an expert in your trading room on every sport. You don't have an archery guy. You don't have a ski shooting guy or, you know, somebody like that or a judo guy. So it's overwhelming. You can't really bet everything. I mean, I follow and see who the battles are, but I've basically been sticking to those sports because that's a lot of what is being offered because I don't know rowing and I don't know archery or anything like that. You know, in diving, it's like when in doubt, take the Chinese team, but they got upset last night by the Brits.
Ooh, man. How about fencing? Are you an expert on fencing?
I am not. It's kind of been enjoyable to watch, but there's so many different disciplines, so I am not a fencing expert, Matt.
Is there a really obscure sport that you love watching? Matt brought up the 3-on-3 basketball earlier. It was getting crushed on Twitter. I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, I like the handball, Mitch.
Handball's good. That's fun.
The Americans, I don't believe, have a team, or at least on the men's side, but it's like, I say this every 4 years. I'm like, why is this sport not more popular? Because this thing is awesome. You know, so it's really great to watch, but, you know, American, it just doesn't go well over here. But it's fascinating to see kind of the other countries and what sports they're good in and how much it means to them.
Hey, Wes, in about 20 seconds, is there a bet on your radar today? Anything you're looking to play in the Olympics today?
Well, I'm not looking to take Iran against Team USA, but I'm not looking to lay 39 against anybody yet either. So I'll be looking throughout the day and see what I can.
All right, pal. Thanks for the time today. We appreciate it.
All right. No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Be good.
Follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1 if you like Olympics tweets.
Yep. I don't think he's hosting anywhere today, but he's hosting the Lombardi Line tomorrow and Wednesday.
Now, he's all over
the map. Yep. Good luck tonight with your bets. We'll see you.